Welcome back to the Dobbies podcast. This episode is all about sustainable gardening, something Dobbies and I are very passionate about. Dobbies has been taking steps towards a more sustainable future over the years, and ahead of National Gardening Week, what better time to discuss how we can all play our part in caring for the environment. I'm Louise Midgley, and today I'm delighted to be joined by a familiar friend of the podcast, Marcus Isles, Horticultural Director at Dobbies. Hello, Marcus. Thanks for joining us again.
Hello, Louise. It's great to be back.
Sustainability is something I feel really strongly about, especially when it comes to my own garden. It's all about giving back to Mother Nature and using organic growing methods, less chemicals and eco-friendly options. With just some simple steps that we can all include in our everyday lives, we will not only encourage a flourishing ecosystem of healthy flora and fauna, but really help the environment in the long term. So it's brilliant to be joined by you today, Marcus, to chat about some greener alternatives and simple sustainable practices that we can all adopt. I expect you've been incredibly busy recently now spring's here. What have you been up to?
Oh, it's been really, really busy. The weather has been really, really nice. So people have really been out there. And in some cases, people forgetting how early it is because we've had such high temperatures that they start to think that it's summer. And of course, now it's gone a little bit colder. So people are scurrying indoors and having to protect their plants. But been really good so far. And it looks like it's going to be a fantastic gardening season this year.
I think people do get caught out sometimes. They get so enthusiastic when you get lovely warm weather in March and then they buy bedding plants that aren't quite hardy enough and get a little bit too enthusiastic and plant them out. But hopefully they've saved them with fleece or something.
We do try and sort of flag up with customers with a lot of signage, etc. Because a lot of people have got a greenhouse maybe, and so they want to buy the plants to grow on. But yeah, if people don't protect their plants when we're having cold, frosty nights, then they can lose some plants. So it's all about seasons and reminding people summer doesn't really start. The weathers don't, frost don't finish until end of May, really.
I know, it's a long time, I know. Well, we're here to talk about sustainable gardening. So could you explain why it's so important, Marcus?
So it's always been a passion of mine. I think for a lot of gardeners, you know, you're so close to nature and working with the seasons, working with the soil, working with the wildlife in your garden, that it is something that a lot of people aspire to if they're keen gardeners. And it's been something that I've been really happy to work with while I've been working at Dobbies to promote and develop our ranges so that they are more environmentally friendly. We're looking at greener alternatives all the time, looking to use less chemicals, and just take into account that we need to look after nature. Everybody's got a responsibility within their garden, the things that they can do to support wildlife and make sure that they're not using things that can damage the environment.
And of course, Marcus, the problem with insecticides is that when you do wipe something out, it throws the whole balance of the garden out.
Implications of using a chemical and what damage it can do. Yes, you can control one thing, but then you cause a problem elsewhere. So with slugs, for example, you know, if you kill those with a nasty chemical, then dead slugs, a hedgehog is going to come along, it's going to eat the dead slug or snail, and then that can have an implication then for the hedgehog. So with birds that we all want to encourage in our gardens, we've spent a lot of money on bird food and putting feeders out, etc. So if we're poisoning a lot of the insects around the garden, then they also should be eating these aphids and caterpillars, etc. So we're taking away live food. So there are always repercussions. So we're looking at things in a lot more detail, making sure that everything that we do causes as little impact as possible to the environment.
So could you tell us more about Dobby's key sustainability plans for 2021?
So we're looking at launching the hashtag Sustainable Dobbies, and we're focused quite a bit on soil health as a starting point. So in terms of looking at the soil that you have in your garden, what you need to be able to do to improve that soil health, which therefore gives you much stronger plants that will then grow very much better. They will produce better crops if they're edibles, but also for ornamental plants, so they'll be able to fight off any pests and diseases much more easily. So you do see it a lot when a plant starts to suffer from pests and diseases. It's quite often the plant that's been underwatered or hasn't been fed properly. So as with all of us, if we don't get fed, watered and looked after, then we can succumb to a cold or a flu or etc. So the more that we look after our plants, the healthier they are, the stronger they are, then we won't need to use a lot of these chemicals and sprays to fight off aphids or any particular diseases. That's my focus, really, to be able to improve soil health so we get healthier, stronger plants. And a lot about soil health is about compost. So we're working on our peat reduction initiative. This year, we're looking at being 90% peat free. So we have worked very hard with our suppliers to make sure that we've got a lot of peat-free alternatives which are arriving in stores over this spring period. I've been making sure that, therefore, we are looking, when we're looking at soil health, we're bringing in these new peat-free products, which will also help then to improve the soil health and drainage of the soil to be able to grow better plants. That's a really exciting move. So we've already got a good range of peat-free compost installed, but that will be increasing as we go through this year. We are also setting targets with our plant suppliers, the nurseries that we use, to also affect the reduction in peat that is being used in compost. We've got a little bit of a longer time scale on that because a lot of plants do require special types of compost. So those are being developed as we speak now. But that is a really good initiative as well to be able to reduce peat in plant production. We're also looking at all of the range of pest control products that we have. So although we're looking at improving plant health and soil health to so that the plants can fight off aphids and other diseases, etc., we do need a certain range of controls for pests, but we're making sure this year we've delisted a lot of products which we would have seen are much more harmful to the environment, and we're actually now listing much safer products for the environment for pest control. This includes things like the nematodes, which are coming into stores very shortly. That is a very well-known now way of controlling slugs and aphids, etc., chafer grubs, vine weevil. So those will be available in stores and online as we go through this spring. So that's a very good way to show that we are moving everything in the right direction towards safer controls of pests in gardens.
And I believe Dobby signed up to support the Terra Carta Charter, which I think sounds very promising. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, of course, as we know, the Prince of Wales is very active in these areas, and the Terra Carta Charter is something that does bring all of the different companies across the whole of the UK together to be able to champion the environment. And yeah, we're very pleased to be involved in that and looking at every possibility of ways that we can bring forward our ranges of product that we're sourcing. A lot of initiatives for this year, but certainly into next year, there are big developments that we're going to be putting in place to make sure that this sustainable message is at the core of everything that we do. So very, very useful and good cause to be joined with.
Yeah, very positive move that. That's wonderful. When people have got a certain type of soil in their garden, be it alkaline or acidic, they can always, if they have got an alkaline soil, for example, and they love plants that love acid conditions like rhododendrons and azaleas, they can always get ericaceous compost and plant into pots rather than having to plant in their garden where the plant might struggle quite a lot.
We do have a, you know, with a spread of garden centres that we have across the UK, there are quite a few that are very limey, chalky areas, especially down on the south coast, in comparison to the stores that are in Scotland, which are in ericaceous soil areas. So they have wonderful soil for ericaceous plants. So we do make sure that that's promoted in store, good range of pots of good sizes and ericaceous compost to make sure that the plant, you know, can grow successfully. And a lot of ericaceous plants actually are really good in containers because they're evergreen. They flower during the spring. They can then be moved around in the garden to wherever the suitable location is. They quite often like a little bit of shade as well. So, yeah, so I think ericaceous plants are a really good choice for people.
Yeah, it works well for them, doesn't it? And Marcus, perhaps you could tell us more about Dobby's environmentally friendly products in store. And is there anything new coming in spring and summer?
Yeah, we're working on a lot of different product areas. So with soil health, we're also now working with Carbon Gold, which includes soil enhancers, feeds and compost as well. So those are being introduced into stores as we speak. They should be available in April. That is part of this whole soil health message where we're introducing ranges. There'll be a couple more this year in terms of products that will help customers with that. And we're also introducing coir products, so the coir blocks as part of our peat-free range. This is a dried block that you can add water to that will then increase in volume and become compost. That is really helpful for customers that really want to buy smaller quantities of compost on a regular basis, keep it fresh. They don't have storage maybe at home for big bags of compost. So these are very convenient, easy to pick up. We're promoting them in our Little Dobbies stores as well, just because they're really convenient. Take them home, add water to them, they expand up, and then you've got a peat-free compost ready to use for indoors or outdoor growing. There's another product called Blooming Amazing, which is a byproduct of power production, actually, which is a really interesting project. And that product is totally organic, it's peat-free, and it's a very good mulching material. So that one we're going to be championing as we go through this year, to be able to give people an alternative from using bark for mulching, which actually does no good to the soil. It actually pulls nitrogen.
Hasn't got any nutrients,
no,
has it?
And it, as it breaks down, it pulls nitrogen out of the soil. So this is a good, it has a feed content and it will break down. It will improve soil health. And mulching is now, it's a very key part of soil health, because we're actually discouraging customers from too much digging. The soil can break down the soil structure. Yeah. So mulching with a good, either a manure or with this Blooming Amazing product will actually allow all the soil microorganisms and worms to break down the product and take it down into the soil. So you cause less disruption in the soil and you will achieve better soil health from that.
And what about, I think you're doing some recycling pots and recycling compost bags.
Yes, we are.
In some stores at the moment, or trialling it?
Yeah, we've been recycling pots for a while now. So those are collected in each store. Every store has a crate where customers can return pots and trays, and they will be recycled. But we've got an initiative now where we're trying to produce garden products from that recycled material. So that's really exciting, so that we can actually see the products coming back into store. So that's something that we're working on the moment, and hopefully that will come into play during this year or early next year. We're also starting a trial on 10 stores recycling compost bags. So these currently are very difficult to get to a location where they can be recycled. So we've got recycling bins going into these 10 stores. And then the bags will be taken away, and we're looking again at products that we can produce from that recycled material to then be able to have that back in store. So that's a really interesting initiative, and I think will be very useful for customers. Otherwise, you just get these piles of bags when you've used up your compost, and what do you do with them? Where do you take them? So hopefully the trial goes well during this spring, and then we'll be rolling that out towards the end of this year.
I often use mine for growing potatoes in. You know, I'll have used the compost and then I put fresh compost in the following year and grow my potatoes in. But they've only got a sort of a certain life expectancy before they start to split or whatever. So that's great that there's a recycling scheme to get them used up.
Yeah, and they have been used previously for sort of, people have used them for putting down underneath mulch, etc. But we're discouraging that now, because over a period of time, of course, they will break down, and we all know about microplastics in soil. So we do feel that this is a better solution to get them recycled and made into something that people can use in their garden going forward.
And Marcus, there's a big drive to encourage us all to use peat-free compost. Could you explain why it's so important?
Yes, it's been discussed over many years, and of course it is a big problem, because peat has been a key ingredient in compost for growing plants in containers since garden centres really launched back in the late 50s, early 60s. So the industry has become very reliant on this product. But of course, it comes from peat bogs that we really shouldn't be disturbing, because of the natural environment, because of the carbon that is being locked up in that peat. So it's been flagged up, and there has been some initiatives put in place by the government to try and reduce the use of peat. But it takes quite a lot of work to actually get all of this in place. So we've been working really hard on it over the last couple of years. And we're pleased now to get into a 90% peat-free position for 21, and that we're looking to be peat-free during 22. So that we're very pleased with. But, you know, it does take quite a lot of development work to get the raw materials that are good enough to replace peat. So coir being a key one of those, which is made as a recycled material from coconut husk. Really useful material, very close to the properties of peat. But also things like bark fines. So it's the finer parts of ground bark that is used in it. Wood chip is used in it as well. Soil is used, of course, for John Innes compost, etc., and some other smaller ingredients like perlite or gravel. So we're working really well with our compost supplier to put together all the different mixes. And I've had my hands in compost bags over the last few months during last year to make sure that we're getting the right mixes for our customers going forward. And really pleased that we're making the steps that we're making. So we will be able to be peat free in 22 and then be making sure that these special environmental areas where the peat bogs are and peatlands are actually being preserved for the wildlife and for the carbon capture for the future.
And actually, I've been using peat-free compost for a number of years. And I'm going to be honest and say initially, we're going back quite a long way now, it wasn't great when, you know, the first types of peat-free compost, it was a little bit sort of thick and it wasn't so good for growing seeds in. But as the years have gone on, it's amazing. So people should be confident enough to use it now. And it's very competitively priced nowadays.
Yes, we do try and make sure that as much as possible we're keeping it at the same price as a peat-based compost. And also, as you say, you know, talking even 2 or 3 years ago, a peat-free compost was quite claggy. And sometimes if you overwatered it, it would hold onto the water too much. And as you say, then very difficult for raising young plants or seedlings. Whereas now, you know, the development that's going on.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
And we're looking at that. You know, all the products that we land this year, peat-free, we'll be doing all the trials on them. We'll be making sure going forward that, you know, we're improving every year. Anything that we can do to make sure that we've got a compost solution for every different plant, from seeds through young plants into a potting on compost, a mature plant compost, and ericaceous as well.
It's good to see the Wildlife Trusts are also campaigning for an end to peat-free compost.
The Wildlife Trusts are, you know, they're doing a grand job and really highlighting that to the public as we land our new product range in stores. Of course, our peat reduction is quite dramatic this year, down to 90% will be peat free. The work that they're doing to highlight the damage that's happening to the peatlands and the peat bogs is helping us on that mission. And we're certainly seeing from customers that they're really engaged with peat free. It's starting to become their go-to product range that they're looking for in stores. So that is great, because that will mean, you know, that we can devote more stock to it and more space to it. And there is information on their website. We're also working on the responsible sourcing scheme as well, which is another initiative by the industry, so that consumers can see the full ingredients of every product that we have in our range, which I think will be another great benefit to the consumer going forward.
Well, I think if consumers knew that peat bogs actually store carbon, we're all talking about climate change the whole time, they would realise how important it is not to disturb them, because they just trap that carbon and store it for such a long time. And by digging it all up, the carbon dioxide is released into the atmosphere.
It is, yes. And you know, that's the whole process that's involved around creating those peat bogs. And it's, you know, it takes tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years to be able to create in this material. And then, you know, within a matter of a few years, it can all be dug up and bagged. And you know, that, of course, what has happened in the past. But we, you know, we are now working on this initiative to make sure that that will be part of the past and not of the future.
So while chemical insecticides kill pests, they are indiscriminate and will also kill any beneficial insects that are in the area. But there is an alternative gardeners can use in the form of nematodes. Could you explain what nematodes are and how to use them? Because actually, I don't think a lot of people understand how to, you know, to put them into the water at the right temperature and how they work.
I don't think it's really reached the mainstream yet, because the company that we're working with that produce the nematodes in a lab, so, you know, these are organisms that are bred and they will prey on the pests. So they are produced in a lab, they're then put into a container. They have a shelf life, so it isn't something that we can hold on the shelf in a store. So the process has to be that you come into the store, you find the product that's suitable for whichever pest, whether it be slugs or chafer grubs or vine weevil, etc. There's one for ants as well. And then you go to the till and pay for it, and then it's posted directly from the lab directly to you, so that it's nice and fresh. Then you add it to water, read the instructions, which are applicable for each of the different pests, add it to water, and then it will be activated. And then those little organisms will then go off, find the slugs or find the ants or find the chafer grubs, and they then will kill them without causing any damage to anything else other than that particular pest. Really useful. This has been used by the plant production industry or the nurseries for a very long time. There are lots of different ones, so even one for aphids and whitefly, etc. So we will be stocking that, the full range of those. As I say, they'll be available from in-store, they'll be available online. There is also different coverage for some of them. So if you've got a large garden, you've got a big slug problem, then you can buy a larger amount. There are millions of these little organisms that come in a pack, and they will be active for quite a long period depending on the conditions. You would normally, they won't really work over the winter. They work over the spring and summer months when it warms up. So we'll be, you know, as we go into April now, then that is a key time for getting these. So they will be landing in stores soon, and then you'll be able to buy them and start to use them, which then just saves you, you know, we don't sell the metaldehyde slug control anymore because we decided to delist that. We do have other safer alternatives, but this is another alternative now that you'll be able to use nematodes, which is slugs still come up all the time as the biggest problem that people have with their beautiful hostas and other veg that they're growing, etc. That they come out in the morning and everything's been munched. That's going to be a really useful tool for people going forward, and much better for the environment.
I think it's just a natural insecticide, isn't it? It's just something that's not going to harm anything else, and that's just the most important part of the whole ecosystem.
Yes, that's absolutely key.
And Marcus, there are plenty of ways people can be more sustainable in their gardens, but for someone who's just starting out, what are some simple practices they can implement in their gardens?
I think just querying everything that you buy. We do have environmental options in most categories now. So for example, simple thing like plant labels, we sell wooden plant labels. So don't buy the plastic ones, buy the wooden ones. With things that are like pots, then pots and trays, we have pots that are made from rice husk. So that, you know, they will last a long time. We also, you know, plastic is not always the wrong thing. We sell pots that are made from recycled plastic. So just look out for all of those little pointers with all of the kit that you're buying. Of course, make sure that you buy peat-free compost. So that's a key factor that you can do. And then really with your gardening, just making sure that you're looking out for wildlife all the time. So anything that you're doing in the garden, even say with tidying up borders, don't tidy up everything. Make sure that you leave an area, look at areas in your garden where you can allow the wildlife to live, maybe to allow some stinging nettles to grow, because they're very good for butterflies, because they will lay their eggs on there. Some areas with a stack of logs that you can actually put into a corner so that wildlife can shelter. Of course, we all want a tidy garden, maybe around the house, etc. But as you go into the further areas, underneath hedges are a fantastic place for hedgehogs to shelter and other bugs and things. So it is about recognizing the different animals and wildlife that you have in your garden and giving them little refuges around the garden without getting too tidy.
Yes, that way of being scrupulously tidy. So the Victorian style of gardening, you know, Parks gardens, where you could just see all the bare soil and the little plants, and there was nothing in between at all, was there? It was just like weeded, and you couldn't have any caterpillars or chrysalis to overwinter there because it was just so incredibly tidy. But I suppose in those days it didn't matter so much because the wildlife wasn't under such threat from pesticides as well, and areas being taken away from them for farmland. So
even if you can only spare a square metre, if you've got a larger garden or you're very much into wildlife gardening, the more, if you connect all those together with all the different gardens across the UK, and also creating corridors, this is a key factor now. So joining up with your neighbours and saying, look, if wildlife come through the fence into my garden here, then can they come through into your next door garden if you make a little hole in the fence so that the hedgehogs can get through? Thinking about it, you know, you add all those gardens up, that's going to be meaningful. And if we as Dobbies are reducing all of these chemicals, plastics, etc., everything that we're using, that must be meaningful to the environment going forward. Also, an area of your garden where you may have a lawn at the moment, which you may be getting the lawnmower out every week, cutting it and cutting it and cutting it, then dedicate an area that you don't need to cut every week. Leave it to grow and to flower. So I've got in my orchard area, so I've got half a dozen fruit trees in my little mini orchard. I don't cut the grass at all. I just leave that right the way through till later on in the summer. And it's just amazing how many insects that you can see. I've got a bench down in that area, so I can just sit down in my little bit of nature. Now, if that was a manicured lawn, you wouldn't get anywhere near the amount of insects. And you can see them, you know, going from flower to flower and seed head to seed head. The birds love it because they've got somewhere to shelter. And I put the bird feeders in that area as well, so that it's a nice little nature garden for them to feel more relaxed in, rather than a manicured lawn.
Oh, perfect. And, you know, the wildflowers come so quickly, because I did it in my garden last year, much to my husband's horror, because he loves his lawn. He loves to cut it all. But I insisted, and I'm going to do it again this year. And the wildflowers just came so, so quickly. It's amazing. And the bees came quickly after that. So it all helps.
Yeah, it doesn't take long at all. The grass can be a bit overpowering. So a lot of, if you're doing a wildflower area, and of course we'd have a lot of wildflower mixes, and we have mixes of seed which are suitable to encourage butterflies and pollinators. Those are actually at the top of our sales charts all the time. Those packets of seeds, they're ones that will do quite, you know, decent size areas. But you actually can, they don't like a too fertile soil. They like something which is a little bit starved. So if you've got an area that you find really difficult to garden, or lawn that doesn't grow very successfully, that's actually ideal for wildflowers, because they will love that. If they've got to compete with grass and it's a bit too fertile, then they can struggle a bit. So that's a useful alternative, really. And when I've been to wildflower trials in different gardens, I've seen different seed trials. And when you see a whole area en masse, all in flower with poppies and things, it just looks incredible.
Well, Marcus, thank you so much for sharing all your horticultural knowledge again with us today. Hopefully be able to chat again soon.
That was great. Thanks very much.
Thank you all for listening. Do feel free to engage in the campaign with the hashtag #SustainableDobbies. And visit dobbies.com for more podcasts, advice and gardening inspiration. And stay tuned for the next Dobbies podcast, which will be out shortly.